This is what we do naturally.
Beautiful.
Be natural now.
Yeah.
Now we just have fun. I mean, this is fun. But I mean, like, so you were yesterday too. All family for you yesterday.
Yeah, all family. You know, did the Halloween thing. You guys saw my, you know. We
did. Yeah.
Did you get to pick that, or you got left with Donatello?
No, I got left with that, man. Who would pick Donatello?
Yeah, nobody. Donatello gets disrespected on a regular.
It's the least desirable. Least desirable.
Did you do something for Halloween?
I didn't.
You did not?
I had a gig. I was the MC for a one of my guys' movie premieres.
Oh, yeah, that was
scary,
Friday.
Movie. Yeah, so I mean, that was an adventure. But it was a dope experience, and the cast and the crew, everybody was there. So we were all on stage, just sending it up for somebody. That was it. Took 2 years for them to make this movie. They shot for 8 days. But the whole process took 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's right. Kind of, we were talking to Dan Perlman a bit about about the process. That's I can't really fathom.
And Mike and Mike came out saying, it was okay.
I said it was phenomenal. By the way,
it was an honor to be there.
I can't say what you say on the camera.
that's a great out. How was it? It was an honor to be there.
Yeah.
But there's something to be said about anybody that starts a process, sees it through to the end, and accomplishes something. Let alone their goals. Let alone if it brings good things to other people. And our guest today has done just that with his life.
Mm. Yes.
Somebody that you know personally, if you wouldn't mind doing the honors.
Yes, yes. So, phenomenal guy. I got to meet him. He's a lawyer. We got to sit down with a couple of his client. I was the translator. Immigration lawyer. And sometimes, you know, when you go there, you're there for business, right? But then in between, we just have a fun dialogue, and we're just shooting jokes, we're laughing. I'm like, this guy's fun to talk to. And yeah, on top of that, vast amount of knowledge. And right now, with everything happening with immigration, with ICE around the corner, this is the perfect
literally
guess.
Around the corner. I was telling you guys just to kind of note this as we get into the conversation.
Yeah.
So Halloween was on Friday, right? October. Yeah. And so hours before the kids in Evanston, and this is the first time we're doing a recording of the episode on a Sunday evening. It's kind of a different vibe in the building, right? It's kind of a beautiful, you know, evening outside, but inside Annenberg Hall, sort of mellow. But a couple hours before all the families and stuff went out on the streets for Halloween, there was a big ICE raid, and the community was out because there was ICE sightings and there was vans, and I saw my first ICE officer. Wow. We were driving to my house. And so that's been on top of mind for Evanston in particular. I think something happened in Wilmette, but like things really went off in Evanston. I think three people were detained. They happened to be U.S. citizens. One of the ICE officers pulled out a weapon. The mayor of Evanston, I think Daniel Bliss, I think I'm getting his name wrong. He issued a new policy for police officers to basically, I think, go and get the information of the federal agents, right? So that's an interesting dynamic too, like the role of the local police. Mm-hmm. And then Friday, the superintendent of Evanston Schools sent out an email to all the families saying today there's no recess because there's fear of ICE, and there's a lot of immigrant families in Evanston. So like it was a beautiful day, and kids were all inside because the fear is real. We were driving. There was all kinds of people out with their whistles. And then I think on Saturday, there was a pretty massive protest in Evanston. And so things are heating up. So that's on my mind. And yet there's so much that we don't know. And so I'm excited to talk with your friends. I mean, how do you guys, what's the kind of history? What's the background of?
There's a, I mean, a lot of the community members, the Sudanese community members, a lot of the younger people, the newer people, this is Marcus, their lawyer, and my cousin. My cousin's also, it's funny because my cousin's also calling me, and he has questions, and I'm like, and he knows I have Mark coming on the podcast soon. He goes, hey, if you get him, can you ask him this question regarding my case about this? I was like, it's gonna be on camera. Do you want your case to be on camera?
Can you give me questions for today's episode?
Yeah. He was asking him this, and this specific question regarding his case, right? And I was like, I'm not gonna ask him that on the podcast. He was like, no, but how about you call me, put me on speaker, and then I'll ask them. I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna do that too. Right? See how that works. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to have him here, and he came all the way. Mark, thank you for coming, everyone. Mark Atkinson. Yeah,
Mark Atkinson.
By the way, welcome everybody. This is PCWB. This is sort of another emergency podcast. Yes. I'm Saper Vakil, your co-host.
I'm your co-host, Mike Knight.
And I'm your co-host, Samir Abdul.
And we're here
with the great Mike. Well, I'm going to say Mike. The great Mark Atkinson. Thank you.
Very glad to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming, man. I guess let's start out by just asking, how are you feeling?
Frustrated. Definitely frustrating when there are laws on the books,
yeah,
you know, protecting people, and then you don't see them actually in action. You know, we grow up pledging allegiance to liberty and justice for all, and then you're seeing that that's not necessarily the case.
And that's
been very frustrating, but I do think that optimism is a strategy that's very important. And I think a professor and a comedian walk into a bar, you know, we need professors, we need comedians, in this time where I think that the majority of our problems is really, really stupid people taking themselves way too seriously.
That's true.
Professors and comedians help with that.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I love the optimism. And also, America's one of the nations where every 4 years, there's a whole new administration.
Mm.
That's, if there's any optimism, is knowing that is like, because you, if you look at world leaders, some countries have like the same leader for the past 20 years, right? America is the only country where, I think outside globally, I was reading this, where every time there's like a summit meeting, the leaders are like, oh, America's going through some stuff right now, but give it 3 more years, they'll come back around.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah, I hope
so too. That's where the optimism comes from.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
So, no, I mean, I feel like you must be busy these days.
Very busy.
And I guess we were talking a bit before we jumped into the episode, but how does your work as an immigration attorney, like, what is it like to be an immigration attorney right now in this particular moment with, you know, ICE raids happening everywhere and, I don't know what's going on with asylum situations and halts on immigration and, you know, give us sort of a lay of the land.
I mean, there is sort of a where the hell do you start at this point? But I mean, from random stops based on how somebody looks or how somebody talks, court arrests, these things are absurd and just seem to be completely outside the realm of anything I learned in law school. They teach you that racial-based stop and frisks are unconstitutional, but just recently the Supreme Court said that it's okay for immigration purposes. Now, mind you, crossing the border without permission is a misdemeanor, and overstaying your visa is just a civil violation. So, these things are apparently, so terrible to certain people that they don't deserve basic human rights and due process and all that. But we talk about it and we fight against it peacefully and see what we can do, you know?
Because there's asylum seekers, right? There's refugees, right? And then, of course, there's like the visas as well. What is the difference between these, if you like? What's the difference between a refugee coming and an asylum seeker?
It's practically the same thing, but only the way you get refugee status is if you're outside the United States, and then the way you get asylum status is if you're inside the United States. And, you know, since we're talking about the current administration, they're talking about significantly reducing the amount of refugees and pretty much focusing on South Africans because that's important. This is what's happening.
In terms of who they're allowing in, this is still happening even though Musk and Trump had a falling out?
They got back together.
They're back together now, right. Was there any halt in the
I don't really follow the refugee caps and as much as I should. So I can't really speak to with a, with a lot of authority. There's no cap on asylums. You just have to prove to an immigration judge or an immigration officer if you entered on a visa that you're eligible for asylum.
So, and I know I'm holding off mic, but so like when it comes to refugee and asylum seeking, right? What, because there's a misconception here. If you're seeking asylum in America, you've already broken the law and got here. So now you're seeking asylum. But if you're a refugee, you're not in the country. You're saying you're not in the country yet. So right. you're kind of applying to get to America, see if America
would accept. You're doing it the right way, which is what people, you know, people need to do it the right way. But as far as asylum, there are plenty of people who enter on a visa legally and then declare asylum. That, and then their asylum case could be pending for 5-10 years.
Yep.
Which it does.
Yeah.
These things pend for years. And then where were we?
Is this because like I came here like my collectively with my whole family
from Sudan
as a refugee, right? It took like a good 7-8 years for everything to get processed while we were in from Sudan to Egypt, and then eventually once we got accepted, then we got here. Now there are a lot of people now with the recent crisis happening in Sudan who have no other option but to leave the country whatever way you can, however you can. So they'll leave Sudan and make it all the way to come here, right? The question I guess I have is that when they do make it here, the right way is to file an asylum.
Within 1 year, you're supposed to file within 1 year of entering the United States.
Interesting. If that 1 year, you have to do some form of applying within that 1 year.
File a form.
And if that 1 year expires, then
you could still file it, but it's going to be significantly more difficult to get an asylum.
Interesting. Go ahead, Samir.
Would you mind? I don't want to put you on the spot, but could you speak? Because you brought up Sudan and the crisis has heightened, just in the last like 72 hours.
Yeah.
And I know this has been a top of mind for you. Would you mind speaking on it just a little bit to give our viewers a little bit of context? And then I'm curious to kind of connect the dot back to like, is there a willingness by the U.S. to take in folks or how that's going to play out? But I think if we can kind of just sort of paint a picture for our viewers a little bit about what's happening, why Sudan has been in the news, especially in the last, you know, 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, of course. Because, you know, Sudan, it's the same. What's happening now is the same thing that's happening 20 years ago, which is the reason why we also left, right? There was the conflict in Darfur, Sudan, that was happening back in the early 2000. And the thing was, back then, technology wasn't as advanced as now. So the world doesn't know what's going on. And there was a lot of people there. And it's the same party, it's the same thing that's happening right now. And what happened was that a lot of people ended up leaving as a refugee. So back in the early 2000s, a lot of refugees come from Sudan, from Darfur specifically, right? The capital, Khartoum, of Sudan was okay at that point. Mm. But all the fighting was happening in Darfur. And of course, we can go on a whole topic of like, is this a proxy war? Who's providing this and that and that? There's a lot, right? But it is essentially a proxy war. Mm. And the predominant key player are usually, as it is, the UAE, because Sudan has a lot of minerals, a lot of gold.
Gold,
right?
In particular.
Gold is very heavy. So that was the reason why this was happening. The UAE will provide weapons to the militia, and the militia in return will extract, send gold back to them. And this was illegal, so that has to be smuggled through planes to get over there, to, you know? And people left for that reason. And then what happened recently was that I think this started essentially the international community recognized that there was a genocide happening in Sudan, and then the current latest president, they ended up arresting him. Mm. Then that leaves essentially the military still intact, and then there's a militia. Both of them there's no leadership, and both parties wanted leadership of the country now. And hence that created the conflict that's happening now, both parties going back and forth fighting. The only problem is that the militia doesn't really care where is fighting, who's getting killed. While the military is like, we can fight, but not in the civilians area. Let's take it outside, etc. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, for a lot of the civilians, it's just the lesser of the two evil. And the lesser two evils is the military as opposed to the militia. And the militia is backed by UAE. And now what happened was that footage came out. A lot of footage came out of Darfur. And more people are seeing the massacres and everything that's happening, which is really brutal. And a lot of the youngsters, a lot of the people in the 20s, 30s, all that can all fled, right? Which is why you see a lot of refugees coming to America.
Are they coming? So is the U.S. coming, one of the main destinations?
One of the main destinations, but there's a lot of other destinations. There's a lot of European, Egypt. A lot of Egypt's another one. Oh, a lot of them in Egypt. But even when they go to Egypt, it's just a means of destination to leave Egypt, to go to Europe or Canada or America, right? So I have a lot of families, a lot of cousins who are calling me, who are figuring out how to get to certain countries for job and anything. Because they're like, Egypt, there's nothing in Egypt for me. There's no job, nothing here, right? But that's kind of essentially, within the past 72 hours, what happened was a footage came out of what's happening in Darfur, Sudan. Al-Fashir is where, it's essentially where my family's from. That's taken over now by the militia. And that's the big, the big outlash you see on social media because of this, what's happening. And so it is very interesting to me because usually a lot of asylum seekers, they came here because they have no other option from whatever country. You know what I mean? And with visa, that's kind of optional. Immigration is a little more optional. You get to kind of apply for a visa and get here. With refugee or asylum, it's almost to me like you're escaping something.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Interesting. And I guess, I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's very illuminating. Mike and I were talking about, we want to know more, and we'll have future episodes where we definitely pick your brain more and know more about your story. But so how does this map onto the current immigration landscape and also the Trump administration? Like, what's their mindset towards the crises that are happening around the world like that in Sudan?
Well, you have something called TPS, Temporary Protected Status. And under Biden, there were a whole bunch of countries that had TPS. Mm-hmm. And that just protects people from removal and gives them work permission. So you have Cameroon, Sudan, Ukraine. A whole bunch of, and he pretty much removed Haiti. Mm-hmm. That's a big one.
Wow.
Pretty much removed all TPS for just about everybody, and then the courts has to go through the court to be done properly.
Is that a mechanism to slow down asylum cases?
Well, there's TPS and then there's asylum. Those are two separate things. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is, you go from Biden, who I think the system was already pretty tough on immigrants.
Yeah.
To Trump, who's discontinuing all these TPSs. These are people who said, look, I'm not from here. I'm eligible for this temporary protected status, and I wish to apply for it. And then they're here. They don't have criminal records. You can't get TPS unless you have a clean record. And then they're putting money into the system by paying filing fees every 2 years, generally. And he and the Trump administration pretty much discontinued all of that.
Wow.
Now, there's some exceptions. It's going back and forth with the court. He has to discontinue it properly. I don't follow it because I just don't have enough time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that being said, a lot of people who came through the border under the Biden administration are not people who just snuck in the middle of the night. They're people who presented their passports to an immigration official and said, I'm from this country. I'm from Sudan, for example. Mm-hmm. And I fear returning to Sudan.
Yeah.
And then they let him in, and then they're supposed to file asylum with him 1 year.
Cool.
Go ahead.
So, and I know I'm getting these numbers wrong because I haven't checked in some time. I want to say the global immigration numbers for 2021 was something around 9 million or so came to America, and number two was Russia, roughly like two, just shy of 3 million. And I wanted to ask you, being that, and fact check me, please, but the ratio is thereabouts, right? Even if I'm getting the numbers wrong.
Are you talking about how many people who are undocumented? Or how many people come in a year?
How many people come in from foreign countries a year?
A year.
Yeah.
Awesome. On visas or just crossing the border?
That part I would have to, because when I actually looked this up, I did look it up. It was on the FBI's list.
Okay.
And so,
Cash Patel's statistics, right?
back before I looked. Oh, okay. Back when I looked was before he was in office.
Gotcha.
But are you trying to say that he is less than 100% trustworthy? are you saying that there's compromising attributes to his character after he got in office?
Yes, I know.
That to say this, being you're probably definitely the expert in the room as far as a bird's eye view, what does America get right about immigration and what does America get wrong about immigration?
That's a good question.
Well, I would say the United States has traditionally had a policy of brain draining the rest of the world through trying to get people who are qualified, who have special skills, and trying to get them into the United States. And if you're into America First policies, I suppose, mm-hmm. then that would be, I guess, advantageous to a country to get smart people into, you know, well-qualified people.
This is your stance on what's good?
What's that?
this is the positive?
No, but it depends on what vantage point.
I mean, for you personally.
Right. I do think the fact that the Supreme Court does acknowledge that people without status have due process rights. Now, are they being followed? Not all the time, and significantly less now than they were so in the past. Mm. But it is good that people have due process rights. I mean, if you don't have due process rights, you know, we're talking about an administration that says we can't trust the federal government. And yet we're going to trust ICE agents to deliver justice and to determine who's a U.S. citizen and who's not. That's insane. That's absolutely insane to say, you know, we can't trust the feds. We can't trust, you know, what happened during the Biden administration. But we can really trust these armed goons who, you know, some of them have criminal history. It is beyond a comprehension how we've gotten to that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is there anything where America's getting right about immigration?
The fact that there is actual due process. Yeah. I mean, it's a fail. I want to couch my terms here, but it's not always perfect. In fact, I would say a lot of the asylums largely depend on the judge or the officer you have. A lot of it do.
Yeah.
The approval ratings for one judge can differ for a number of reasons. Some judges just take in certain cases and that sort of thing. But also, you would think if somebody's administering justice that the approval rating would be similar, whereas the statistics are there. You can look it up on the internet. There are some judges with a 5% approval rating. There are some judges with a 95% approval rating. I don't account all of that to be improperly administering justice, but that sounds strange.
I mean, on a street level, I know that much. Everybody on a street level, if you're being a knucklehead in the streets, you know when you're in the holding cell, who's the judge today?
Right. Of course.
Yeah. Of course. All of y'all, hey, get comfortable because ain't none of us making it out. And you know, if you hear a certain name, even if you've never been in that system, everybody's like, hey, if you got a chance, you got it with buddy that's out there right now. So, I mean, that makes sense on a regular level. I get that.
And I think just to follow up to what he's saying is also, I guess, is this also hurting America in the long run without us knowing it?
It depends on what your goals are in the United States. I mean, if you're looking for a white nationalist state, I don't know. I seriously do not understand what the end game is with this administration. I don't know. But truly, if you're looking to build an economy, if you're looking to build a peaceful society, then I don't know. Having armed goons traveling, you know, walking through Evanston and intimidating schools is not a good way to do that.
And I mean, like, I've read, right, like, this is on the news now, even, like, there was, like, formers who came out who supported Trump in this administration who came out and complained that they're losing workers now because Trump is sending them back. And it's, like, it's hard to comprehend that itself because now you're like, wait, you didn't think this is going
to
happen?
Hard to comprehend that somebody didn't think it was going to happen. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, Mike, you always ask these questions that linger, right? This is a great, great, I think, question. What did America get right about immigration and what did it get wrong? I mean, you know, me and you, Samir, we're both immigrants to this country. And I think...
Thank you, Mike.
And what country are you from?
Iran.
Iran, great.
And, you know, this comes up in so many family conversations and so many political conversations because, you know, there is a underlying sensibility of gratitude that a lot of... I'll just speak for the Iranian immigrant experience that we have towards this country, right? From my own experience was I was, you know, I was born in 1983 in the middle of the Iran-Iraq war, which took over a million lives. And I was lucky to be, to have parents who were, my parents got student visas. They came, we started at our journey in America in Milwaukee.
Right, so it was the Shah and everything.
Yeah, it was right. It was after the revolution. So the, the Islamic Revolution happened and then the war happened, all these things were going on. And we came to, so the higher education system designed really, you know, I mean, we can call it brain drain in some ways, or we can call it, you know, welcoming people and helping them escape difficult situations.
Sure. Yeah.
So there's this underlying, and like America's definition in some ways is like this country of immigrants, nation of immigrants that's been open. So I feel, you know, I always feel some sense of responsibility to speak to that. Now, I couch that, though, because in certain conversations, politically, I can be reminded by my own family members who might have a different take on the current politics.
You better be
grateful, right? You know, like, why are you talking all this shit about America? Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of thing comes up a lot.
Yeah.
And my always instinct is, I want to be able to talk just as much shit as you. Right? Or as you. Like, I want to feel... But there is this... But I do think that's a fundamentally good. I guess my answer to that I would love to
still think as somebody born in America and then benefit had lucky enough to live throughout the world and not just visit a place, but live there long enough to like actually activate in the culture, right? To believe that somebody can still be an immigrant, look at America, and say, if I go there, I have a chance, right? Because a lot of the immigrant waves, as far as however I get my knowledge, right? You have Irish came over here during the potato famine, right? You have a huge group of Italians come over here to escape fascism, right? You have the Germans that came over here because, what was it again, right? like throughout history, you have gigantic groups of cultures. You have, unfortunately, you have, you know, Asians from China and Japan building railroads, they were put into indentured servitude. That's why if you want the greatest Chinese food, go to San Francisco. They've been here the longest, right? At the heart of a lot of these humongous groups of cultural waves coming to America, usually at the heart of it is something horrendous happening. The Cuban wave in Florida, forget about it, right? But to still think that these folks can come from all over the world. I just hope that America, at the end of the day, being the best bad system, in my opinion, people can still look and go, you know what? That place is cool. That place is cool. That place is cool. But if I go there, I have a chance to start with whatever money I got in my pocket, whoever I got in my group. And I have a chance. Might not make it, but I have a chance.
Image... My sense, I guess I'm going to ask this to you as an immigration expert here, has that image of America, right, that has invited people who are experiencing difficult situations in different countries, has that image of America as a place to come to, has that been shattered? That's my sensibility right now. I mean, people are not looking to, are people in Sudan looking to America right now? Are people in Iran looking to America? Can they?
At this point, I don't think that people are able to actually get in. I mean, during the Biden administration, they were acknowledging the asylum laws and international laws that were agreed upon, you know, over 50 years ago, there's such a thing as a refugee or asylum seeker. And if they say that they're fearing and that there's a credible fear at the border, that they should be let in. They've stopped letting people in. How could the current rhetoric and the current policies not... shattered isn't the optimism that I like. it's tarnished, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I refuse to believe that it's shattered in the sense that I do think things can get better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But how is this not affecting the tourism industry? How is this not affecting what, you know, the professionals coming in from all sorts of different countries to work in the United States? Who's going to want to live in a place where there's so many people putting people in these little groups that shouldn't matter, but they do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
One of the things that I find so interesting about this current moment when it comes to immigration is this kind of this relationship between the big tech industry. I mean, Elon Musk is a core example of that, and the Republican administration right now. This is somewhat of a new alliance, at least at this level, right? I mean, we have to remember the tech industry, you know, for some period of time, whether or not we agree with it, had a different vibe. Right. They even at some point had a more liberal vibe, a more progressive vibe. Yeah. If you think about even what tech like represented to people during the Obama administration, represented sort of
Mark Zuckerberg contributions, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried before, you know, his whatever.
So now, so now you have this alliance between pretty much all the big wigs in the tech administration and the Trump administration. But what's interesting and the tension, there's a tension there, and immigration is a tension because the hardcore conservative white nationalists who have been the base of the Trump administration, they're anti-immigrant, right? And the tech industry knows almost better than any other industry in America that they need immigrants. And so now there's been some clash. And even when Musk was in, you know, was working closely with Trump, that is a point of contention. I'm wondering, are you seeing any of that on your, you know, in the office on a daily basis, or how is that stuff? How do you expect that to play out in the coming years?
Well, I don't know if Musk and Trump are getting. I don't even know if Trump knows who Musk is at this point. It's hard to say, but I mean, it sounded like Trump and his MAGA folks were trying to mess with the H-1Bs, the business visas. And yes, I mean, that seemed like some contention. I don't know how I can expand upon that, but it seems like we're shooting ourselves in the foot, but as a country, but then for voters, for Americans to think, what is the purpose of this country? Is it to create this homogenous group of people that all think and act the same, or is it this conglomeration of, you know?
I mean, I guess the question I have is like, because in order for you to do that, to make this a homogenous country, you have to first kind of, convince enough people to know that, hey, America's image is changing. America's image is supposed to be white, nationalist. Now we're deviating away from that. We don't even recognize ourselves anymore. If we don't do this, the country's going to be taken over by immigrants. That's kind of the messaging you have to do to brainwash enough people to get enough votes. But the thing about America, as you're saying, is that it is an immigrant nation.
It will never not be.
Right? And so, like, the whole idea of sending Hispanic back to me is very absurd. Right, because you go to California, you go to San Diego. It's in the name, right? I was, should we just send the whole state back to Mexico? Because it doesn't make sense.
I know that there's a there's the ideal, right? And there's definitely a difference between whatever's happening in my phone right now, which I was talking to Mark outside. According to my phone, zombie apocalypse, World War VII is happening at this exact moment. At any given moment, I turn my phone on, it's the end.
We got beverages at least.
At least we have beverages. But we were outside today, pretty far from the end, right?
Yeah.
And is America's... America definitely has a history of white nationalism, and when things get tight, white nationalism tends to rise to the top as far as the zeitgeist goes. But is it not an immigrant country, like, without being sarcastic about it? Like, isn't it literally that? Because it is, as far as I've seen, one of the least monochromatic countries on planet Earth.
Right.
Go to Japan right now, try and find a taco. Good luck to you. That's like the number one thing for immigrants when they come here. What are these what are these magical things with vegetables and meat folded in, or what did you call it again? Or tortilla? Or bring this back to my country right now. You'll be a billionaire. Like, this is, once you land here, unless you land in Vermont or West Bubba Town, Iowa,
yeah,
you're going to see, like, wow, oh, everybody is here, right?
But that's what makes this country so beautiful. And it's also, like, one thing I've noticed is, like, you don't know you're American until you're outside of America, right? In the country, as people criticize America, is usually because they want, especially they want the success of this country, right? Mm-hmm. Like, even as a first generation immigrant or just fresh out the boat here in America, right? You, when you're criticizing America, I feel like it's coming from a place, for me in particular as well, is that because you feel like this is your home.
That's it. That's it. Right. Right,
you feel like this is my home, and I want my home to be the best home possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you go outside of America and you hear someone else, a Qatari or someone else, shitting on America, you're very quick to defend it.
Yes,
I find myself defending it when I'm in Sudan and I'm in the market and I see people fighting, and then someone says something about America. I was like, yeah, careful now. Careful now. Right?
We talked about that.
And I did the Obama voice with that. I didn't even know why it came out in the other. Careful now. Careful.
Because you came to Chicago from Iowa. I came to Chicago from Nebraska. And at a certain point in time, I don't know when it happened.
Yeah.
There was a certain point in time where I'm starting to try and live in Chicago. Mm. But I spent the last however many years in Nebraska. And then there was a certain point where I was like, oh, I live in Chicago. I identify as a Chicagoan, and I'm going to go visit my OGs in Omaha. You know, you came out from California, but now, like, if you go back, if you go back to Cali, and somebody's like, "Ah, the White Sox stink. Deep dish pizza," you'll be like, "What?
Shut down it."
Yeah, there's a certain point in time you identify with where you are.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the beautiful thing about America. As opposed to other nation, it's that.
Because I don't know how long I could live in Japan and one day and be like, I'm definitely Japanese now. Shut up, bro.
Okay, but where is the public sentiment at, right? Because I feel like if we think about like the big narratives about immigration, there's the one that we've talked about, which is like, this is a country of immigrants, or it's always going to be an immigrant country. You know, we should continue. You know, people like Samir and myself our families have benefited from being welcomed, and it hasn't been a story of, you know, exclusion or marginalization at every step or every turn. You know, quite to the contrary. Like, especially cities like Chicago. I lived in Chicago now. I mean, Evanston, Los Angeles, the Bay Area, and amongst other cities. And it's like, you know, I think the story of at least my family is one of being like, you know, more or less embraced. Right? There's stories of tension, but mostly that's the narrative. But then there is a legitimate and forceful narrative on the other side, which is like, man, Biden opened the borders, right?
They're eating the dogs.
They're eating the dogs, and that doesn't. Let's also be nuanced about it, right? It doesn't only come from white folks, right? There are, you know, populations of African Americans in Chicago who are anti-immigrant. There's
universal.
Iranian immigrants who are pro-Trump. Like, you know, we joke about this all the time, right? They're like, we're immigrants, but like, we're the last ones. We shut the door behind us.
Yeah.
So there's also a narrative around, you know, you got to follow the law.
Yeah.
Right. And enough is enough, and you can't just open the border, right? And so a question that comes to my mind is, in the legal community, amongst lawyers, what's the sensibility? Is there a consensus or a near consensus that what's happening with ICE right now is unlawful? Or is there debates happening in the legal community?
Okay. Boy.
Yeah, it's like,
I mean, you have attorneys from all different walks of life. The majority of the attorneys that I speak to are immigration attorneys, you know, fighting for their clients. So obviously there's a skewed perspective there. There is an enormous question on whether people who did not enter with permission are eligible for bond if they get detained, which I mean, if you cross the border as I said, it's a misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. You cross the border, you get caught, and then you have some sort of asylum case or some other case. Maybe you're married to a U.S. citizen or something, and don't have a criminal history. I mean, I think most people wouldn't want that person mm-hmm. to be detained, if anything, just for the expense of detaining that person.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people who have been detained for 6 months for what? It didn't happen that much under Biden, and I thought that was a good use of resources. And apparently Pritzker is refusing to provide detention areas for the majority, state funded detention areas for immigration. So it sort of does there's a negative effect there, because then they send people to other states that will allow detention, which is sort of a nasty thing to do. Now you're stuck in Indiana. Your family doesn't know where you are.
So he's not getting his hands dirty.
Well, I mean, I think what he's doing is good. And then there's a very passive-aggressive, response, which is like, okay, well, then we're still going to detain him, but we're going to ship him over to Kentucky. You know, that's sort of a nasty
but then if it's in Kentucky, it becomes Kentucky's jurisdiction,
yes,
right?
Yes, which is... It stinks. I mean, I can attend some of my clients' hearings through web, but most of the time, if somebody's in Louisiana or Kentucky, I would say you're going to want to get somebody who knows that judge. I mean, it does really help to know the judge's level of thinking and all that kind of stuff.
And would you also say, just following back to Sapir's question regarding, you know, between the legal community, different, having different beliefs, would you also say that's the same thing with the judges as well?
I mean, we can talk judges in Chicago. I can talk judges in Chicago, meaning there was a surplus of judges in Chicago, and they're great judges. There was a surplus of judges, but they were deficient in the amount of government's attorneys. Mm. So things were really slowed down. Now, under Trump, three judges quit on the same day. Five judges were fired.
In the city of Chicago?
In the city of Chicago alone. Two judges were... One was the head judge of the entire country, and the other one was the head judge of this jurisdiction here in Illinois. So, I mean, I haven't counted, but at least eight judges were either let go or they quit on their own accord.
And Trump got two people elected to the Supreme Court, no?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Wait, two, more than two.
Three, I think. Yeah.
Three,
yeah.
Of them.
Three?
Yeah.
Is the intention to this to get rid of these judges and have is to slow everything down, essentially?
I don't think they want to slow things down. I mean, the judges that were let go were either head judges or they were people who were hired under 2 years by the Biden administration. So it was sort of like a retaliation thing.
I guess what was underneath my question was that if I make a kind of a comparison to my world of academia and higher education,
yeah,
I mean, this is no surprise to anybody, right? Like the Trump administration has made, you know, no bones about making higher education its enemy, right?
Yeah.
And most professors, whether you are in biology, engineering, the social sciences, or humanities, you know, are fairly clear that the Trump administration is going after, you know, knowledge production, going after basic research, that the First Amendment is under attack in American universities, which is very core to the functioning. I'm curious, like, amongst people who are trained in law, amongst not just immigration attorneys, but like the legal community, is there more diversity in viewpoints in terms of what's happening with this administration is unlawful? Or is there like people who understand the law are like, this is bogus and like what's happening is just out of bounds in terms of the legal frameworks that are in place in this country?
I would think the majority of attorneys, at least that I know, that's what I can speak to,
right,
are appalled, absolutely appalled. I mean, you're talking about what's going on in universities. Somebody speaks out against a conflict in the Middle East, and they're, I believe they were a professor, an assistant professor, but just a resident, and they got taken away. I don't remember the guy's name. Maybe you do. I don't know. But, I mean, these things are happening, and it's the First Amendment for a reason. If you don't have the ability to express yourself, then you have nothing. And I know the other side thinks that the Second Amendment is the most important. But how could the First Amendment not be the most important?
Do non-citizens have different First Amendment protections than citizens?
No. If you are inside the United States, you have the same constitutional rights. I mean, you have the same constitutional rights criminal-wise, due process. You have same constitutional rights of privacy. It doesn't matter if you're, at least it shouldn't, whether you're a resident or a citizen. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely appalling. And people should be able to speak out against things that they believe are wrong. And that's, again, it's the First Amendment for a reason.
Are there still any effects from the Patriot Act? Or is that, did that even have like a shelf life? Or it's
the XYZ? Patriot Act is...
Can you guys define what the Patriot Act is?
Well, he was talking about due process being one of the benefits to, the American immigration system. Under the Patriot Act, I was following directly after 9/11. Please correct me. I'm going to get most of this wrong, I'm sure. But directly following 9/11, the federal government came out with the Patriot Act, which kind of basically gave them permission to listen to your phone calls, wiretap, check. They kind of let relax some of the amendments of America in order to pursue terrorist activity. And that also came up with, they were shipping out perceived immigrants to Guantanamo Bay, which is outside of America's jurisdiction, which also means that they didn't really have to worry about
the waterboarding
or any following any rules. They're in Cuba. So, but I was asking because I don't know if that, I stopped thinking about it. And now my phone says, ask app not to track you. And I'm like... Somebody getting like stabbed with a fork is gonna ask the guy to not stab him with the fork. How often does that work? Never. So me, no.
I think advocates of the Patriot Act are like, relax. This is just to stop terrorism. And it's like, well, who's deciding what is terrorism? Who's deciding what these things
are? Same thing Giuliani did with the RICO Act. Like he was like, ooh, look at this. This works exactly for what I needed to do.
You're talking about to get the mafia. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, basically, because it wasn't, Giuliani didn't come up with the RICO Act, so somebody today could take the Patriot Act if it's still in effect.
Well, that's what they're doing, is using the Patriot Act to maintain.
So that is what's happening.
I think
in
so.
In a manner of speaking.
I think so. And it seems like as the executive branch progressed from, from a long time ago, it just seems like there's this continuous encroachment on power by the executive branch. Even Obama was somebody who definitely increased the amount of power for the executive branch to the point where I would be like, careful, we don't know who's next. And now we know who's next, and they're abusing power. And again, this is just to prevent terrorism. And so I guess for voters, they're like, well, or U.S. citizens rather, well, I'm not a terrorist, so that doesn't concern me. But who defines what terrorism is?
Are you telling me it's hard to get the genie back in the bottle?
Definitely. you believe in genies too. That's good.
I rub a lamp every morning.
Every morning.
Check my bank account. Oh, this is going on.
So I guess for even to like give it more of like a broader perspective for the general audience, right? When you see like early on during this administration, when they're labeling like a lot of these undocumented immigrants, like they're stealing our jobs, right? Some of them are criminals, and some we assume are good people, right?
We assume.
So when you're looking at that, what is that actually? Because I know this is that. How false is that? Right.
How false is it? I think Mike and I were talking outside the building. It's like I strongly believe that people are basically good, and this whole idea that there are criminals that are doing terrible things is a myth to guide voters into being misled and to relinquishing their own freedoms for some weird form of security where I cannot fathom seeing ICE agents in the area and saying, this is making me safer. This tear gas is making me safer.
Yep.
But I guess that's how some people believe. Like, I cannot fathom it.
Because there are, like, there are people with major platforms that supported this administration.
True.
But they were under the impression that this admission is going to only target the criminals, the people, the migrants that have a criminal background that came here. That's our main target.
We're talking about Joe Rogan here, right?
We're talking about Joe Rogan. We're talking about, yeah, like him in particular as well. But like that was what they were fed, that, hey, we're going to, this admission is going to go for the elite, the criminals that are in this country. Right. The thing is, they made it very clear that they're not going, like, also, like, I don't know the last time I read where they caught a criminal. Everyone that they are catching are the basic, just civilian that are working at Menards or just these given, you know.
And the United States government was getting criminals after they, criminals. I mean, I don't like that term myself, but people with criminal convictions, if they didn't have status after they served their term, they were convicted of something, whatever they did, they would be given 24 hours to be handed into ICE custody. Mm-hmm. That was happening before the Trump administration. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense. So I mean, from a legal perspective, it's like we were doing these things already.
I was gonna say, not to derail, I hope this runs parallel, but something that we bring up, which is hard not to bring up, but is something that we, as a group, actually focus on, is AI, right?
Okay.
And with AI in particular, they make a big to-do. It's passing the bar. If I have a legal mm-hmm. question coming up, the first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to either coin flip between now Google or ChatGB. These days, I'm probably going to ChatGB that bad boy.
Even if you Google it, you're still getting the AI summary up the top. You're still getting
an AI thing, right? Now, the way I grew up and in my head, practicing law is sexy. Objection, overruled, sustained, no further questions, right? Like, I don't see ChatGB doing that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if I'm a savvy immigrant, you know, I know my way around the Googles, I know my way around the ChatGBs, I'm going to start using that. You as a lawyer, I'm assuming you remember a time before all this AI business,
yes.
And now you're currently also, you know, quite active during this revolution on the internet. Is that what are these conversations you're having amongst your community of lawyers?
Specifically about AI?
Yeah, because they used to have askalawyer.com, which is like, hey, howsickami.com, which is, you got a headache, upset stomach, but you got 3 weeks. But it's different now. It's pretty fine.
I'm interested to know what you're going to say about that, too.
I mean, I don't know what to say about it.
What are you guys saying about it?
I use it?
Yeah.
As a springboard...
Sure.
For further research, I definitely do use it. Mm-hmm.
If we're four truck drivers right now, we're like,
yeah.
Hey man, you heard about Cali? These cars, they drive on themselves.
Right.
This is right? We're four lawyers now, what's our conversation?
Do I think I'm going to be out of a job?
I don't think you're out of a job at all.
Yeah.
But the generation and the one after you?
Maybe.
Wow.
But there's a big debate, you know, in this building and education and K-12 and universities is AI good? Is it bad? Should we use it? Should we embrace it? How do we do it? Is it good for language? These are active debates.
Yeah.
Is it similar in the legal community?
I think so. I think there are definitely some debates as far as the absurdity of, you know, one side gets their AI generated brief and then another side gets their AI generated brief and then the judge could use AI to brief those two things and then to come up with a decision based on computers. I mean, like, we're not that far away from doing that.
Wow.
I mean, how a judge could do that right now. You just plug and chug the briefs and see what AI comes up with.
To go back to kind of an earlier part of our conversation. So we have Judge Johnson.
Okay.
Hard ass. If you're going in there, good luck to you. You're getting some kind of time. Maybe not a lot of time, but you're getting some kind of time because Judge Johnson, everybody knows, mad, right?
Okay.
And then you have Judge Joe Brown. Hopefully, if you had a good night with this old lady, you just walk away with papers, you yeah. know, whatever, whatever. It's a crapshoot. Which one are you getting? I don't know. AI. Here's the stipulations. Here's the statutes. Here's the whatchamacallit. Here's your case. The human touch. Boom, 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 boom. And you off to do whatever every single time. Cookie cutter. Which one of these versions is preferable?
Which one is better?
The imperfect human or
the AI?
The AI that gives no care whatsoever.
I think the imperfect human is probably better than the cold, hard, data-driven AI. I mean, don't you?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I mean...
yeah, I can't charm the Terminator.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, this guy. Of course.
I was going to ask you, I was like, do I go more political? But I'm curious about how you got into this, if you wouldn't mind, just sharing kind of your path.
He's a musician, this guy.
Oh, yeah.
You're a musician, but how did you come into this path of immigration law? And...
I mean, it's nepotism. My parents started the firm 1980, and my brother's there. My brother, myself, and my mother, we were still there. My father retired last year.
Nice.
And I love it. I love working with my family. I almost everybody who I say, they say, I couldn't work with my family. But, you know, it just takes one. It takes one difficult person to really make things tough. But, you know, I love working with my family. We got a wonderful support staff of five other people. And it's just... A nice small office. And
did you grow up like when you were in high school? Did you want to be a lawyer?
I worked there in high school.
Okay.
Did I want to be a lawyer? I did the musician thing for quite some time.
Which you still do, right?
Mm-hmm.
I still do. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're Fugudugu, the band is playing Old Town School folk music this coming Wednesday.
I love that. Wow. I love that you have a creative release.
Oh my God.
He does comedy. He teaches. Yeah. And his last name. Lawyer.
Thank you. I was waiting for the right moment to bring that up. The whole time, I was barely listening. When do I bring up the fact that I'm a lawyer? Vakil means lawyer.
Vakil, all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any in the family?
No, nothing. No, we do. We have a cousin who's a lawyer, but it's not like
my dad. He still can't practice it, but it is.
practicing
it.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Write to the Bar Association, see if they'll let you practice.
Wait, so okay, because you did music first,
yeah,
and then eventually, well, you said you also high school worked with your family.
I did. I would summers, you know, summers. I would go there, so I'd be exposed to that. I, even as a young kid, I'd hang out in the waiting room and you know see what's going on. You know, get to play with the copy machine. You know.
Yeah.
I bet you didn't imagine being an immigration lawyer in this particular.
No, absolutely not. In fact, my parents say, this is the most difficult time we're experiencing.
You feel that stress in a daily kind of way compared to, let's say, like 4 years ago?
Well, 4 years ago, I mean, are we talking about the first Trump administration?
I think Biden, I think, right?
I guess you're right, yeah. I mean, it's very stressful. And not to mention the fact that they come out with these new policies and then they get challenged with the courts. So then if you have, let's say, 1,000 clients... And then Trump does some decree saying everybody's going to have to do X, Y, and Z. And then, you know, as an attorney, it's probably not going to happen, but it's going to go. It's going to start to happen, and then it's going to get challenged in the courts. For example, he just decreed everybody who has an asylum application pending has to pay $100 a year just because, you know. So then I have, how many asylum clients do I have? A lot. And so then they all call me, and that is incredibly stressful. I have a wonderful, wonderful team of people in my office who can handle those calls. But then just last week, a judge was like, no, the way he did it was unconstitutional. So all that time of like getting people to pay the $100 fee, it was all just wasted. It's just wasted time. It's so unnecessary. It's such a waste.
Is that kind of like a filibuster kind of? Is he kicking the can for any particular reason that we're not in the know?
I think his supporters just love seeing people suffer.
It's headline snatching.
Yeah, I mean they love seeing people suffer. I that there's no getting around it.
Man, that's so interesting. Is it harder now? Are like clients calling you with? Because I know like even with the family members and the community that I know, they're constantly like, I don't know what's going on with my case. It's taking too long.
Yeah.
And so are you, like with everything happening right now, are more clients calling you with uncertainty?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. No question. Just to share a little tiny story, because it's central to this area about what's going on with ICE now. Thursday, just about to leave. You know, I got my team members who are about to leave. There's a phone call. This guy, he's stuck, I guess you would call it a dragnet in O'Hare. He's a driver.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a case pending, and it's not completed. And he's like, they took 15 cars, and they pulled them. I don't know how you pull over 15 cars, but they took a bunch of cars, and they said, you can't go. And then they're asking, are you a citizen? Are you a citizen? Are you a citizen? And he's like, I'm in line to do this. I don't know what to do. And I was like, well, I'm gonna email you. I'm going to text you all the documents you need,
mm-hmm.
But also say that you have an attorney and that your case is pending. I would never tell anybody to lie to anybody. But that being said, how are you going to get an ICE officer to understand the nuances of this particular case?
Wow,
These are not bright people.
So
then it comes his turn, and he's still on the phone with me, and he goes, these are my documents, blah blah, and by the way, I have an attorney. He's on the phone. Do you want to talk to him? And they didn't need to see anything else. They said, oh, we don't want to deal with you, or we don't need to deal with you, simply because he said, I have an attorney.
That being said,
wow. As in like they let him go.
I'm in my 40s, so I've gone through some profiling in my life.
Sure.
Ask my dad, his stories are worse. Keep going back, you get the picture, right? Yeah. And without giving away your practice, we definitely want people who have these questions to come see you and get the best information. But anytime I get a chance to interview with a lawyer or talk to a lawyer, I always ask the same questions. When and if I get pulled over, what is the best thing for me to do? Mm. Now, if you're an immigrant, right, and you're in America, boom, ICE, you can't get away or whatever, what have you. You get the knock at the door, you can't get away, blah, 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 blah. What are your ABCs to this person before they give you a phone call?
Driving is a little different. Because driving, if you get pulled over, you do have to show identification and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, if it's non-driving, I do not wish to speak with you. And if they continue to speak with you, then you say, I need to speak with my attorney. You ask, are you being detained? And if they say yes, then you say, I need to speak with my attorney. But everybody in the United States has a right to not speak with anybody from the government. Under normal circumstances. Mm-hmm. If you're driving, it is somewhat different, which is why if you don't have status or you have a removal order out against you, I would recommend not driving.
Not
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But you are under no obligation to speak with any ICE official. In fact, I would strongly recommend that U.S. citizens exercise that right to make it a more perfect union. Yeah, I mean, to make it... to make sure that they are doing their job, and their job is not to bully people and to try to detain people for no good reason. So I do not wish to speak with you, and if they continue to speak with you, I need to speak with my
attorney. Now I know with city officers, you can't, hey, why am I being detained? Why am I being pulled over? Am I under arrest? Right. I don't have to do. These folks as federal agents, if they're detaining you, do they have to express a purpose, which would ultimately be, hey, you look like you're not from this country?
Which apparently the Supreme Court said is okay, which is disgusting.
Which is racial profiling, essentially.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, if you have an accent, if you look a certain way, that is not the America that I know.
So saying the we live in different America.
I hear that.
But yeah. And that's not to say my entire life. I've just been in sticky situations, and some of them you're like, really, guys, come on. So the best thing to do in that worst case is to just, hey, I'd like to speak with my representation, and then just keep your mouth shut.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So asking for a friend, Samir, if he gets pulled over and they ask him for if he's a U.S. citizen, he doesn't have to say.
If you are of the privilege that you can handle getting detained for a temporary amount of time, I would recommend that people use that privilege because it ensures that ICE has to do their job. Meaning, if you're okay with getting detained, you can say, go ahead and detain me. And eventually they will eventually, hopefully if the system works, realize that you're a U.S. citizen. But I mean, somebody like myself, if I get stopped by an ICE officer, that is, to refuse, are you a citizen? That's what they're asking these days. Are you a citizen? I would say, I don't have to speak with you. I don't recall being born. That's my own little take on it. But I don't have to speak with you. And if they want to waste their time on me, it's less time that they're wasting on somebody else.
So you're saying essentially right now, a possible solution is that if you're a citizen or anyone with a green card, if you get pulled over by ICE, go with them in a way, make their life harder. That way they will...
If that's what they want to do, if they want to do dragnets, then why not exercise your constitutional right? And which is more, they will say that's obstruction of justice. Mm. I will say my client's constitutional right to not have to speak with somebody is significantly more important than whatever it is you think you're doing.
Mm.
This city in particular, I've seen the city... fighting back against them.
The
whole neighborhood's out. People are blowing their horns. They're doing alerts. You yourself, to go back to when we were talking about Sudan, I mean, you're definitely like upping the energy on getting the word out.
Yeah.
Is that in your community, are these talks starting to hit close to home? Like in your community based in, because, you know, we're talking about what's happening in Sudan, actually in the motherland, but in your community here in Chicago, how's those conversations going?
The conversation about ICE?
With ICE.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to what you said. A good 80% to 85% of the community are like, absolutely, this is horrendous. Mm. Right? There's always a good 15%
are like, great.
Let me close the door behind me. I got here, right? Yeah. Right?
We all have those.
and then you go to my folks, and my folks are like, why can't they take these people, the one that are like, close the door?
I hear that a lot.
But majority of people, of course, they're like, they're terrified. There's a lot of truck driver stop working truck because they're afraid that even though they have cases pending, that if they get pulled over, they will be taken away. So there's a lot of people that quit that, and it brought a lot of fear, and also not to mention amongst the community itself, amongst white folks and other people from the community, there was a division that this administration is creating to be like, if I'm white, I'm like, hey, I'm okay. Nothing's gonna, like, you know, I mean, chances are you may be a citizen, but maybe you have a family member who's not, like, there was that division that the admission
created. I'll get pulled over by a city cop, but I'm not worried about getting pulled over by ICE.
Right.
And if I do, 30 seconds into our conversation, they're like, all right.
But would you talk to them? Or would you say, would you say, I don't
would
have
I to talk to him? If I get pulled over and lights are behind me and it's at nighttime, I'm turning the light on. Yeah. I'm dropping the windows. Right. I'm presenting my hands.
Sure.
And I'm shouting every move I'm about to make. Because I don't know if you've ever had a cop pull out on you.
Right.
But that hole in the front of that thing gets big as hell.
Yeah.
When you think it's about to be over.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Again, my experience, I don't come from a culture where challenging the police, unless that's what we're all doing.
Right.
Unless we're having a discussion and, hey, us versus them time, challenge.
Yeah.
If we're not having that conversation, then I'm trying to make it to the other side of this interaction with that guy who has a badge and that thing on his head.
Yeah. Right.
So my perception of it, I'm not going to cause trouble
to
12. I'm for an ideal. And unfortunately, to a degree, and I'm not captain of Black America, but to a degree, when things start to happen amongst the immigrants in America, and again, this isn't all Black folks, Black culture, but I'm confident that this is a section of Black culture. You're talking about your 15 and 85%. There's going to be a section of Black culture that's like, they've been hanging us up by our big toes for the last hundreds of years and woo woo woo, and now everybody's focused on them people.
Yeah.
My SNAP benefits is finna go out
2 days
ago. Who's worried about us?
That's a real
we
thing.
Keep looking over the
yeah.
So that's a big part of our community, which is
why do I care
about them?
It's
like I have issues right now, and I was born here. My daddy was born here. So it is. You'll definitely sympathize, but there's a part of the Black community that they'd have to look over their own problems to see somebody else's problems, and it's not gonna happen.
I tell you, like I'll even give an example to this was like when there was a video I posted like a while ago, and I remember in the video there's a lot of comments, and one of the first comment was about it was a Black woman who immediately replied back right away, and she was like, hey, you should just stay quiet. This is not as a Black man, this is not for you right now. And it was like, let them handle their fight. When we were suffering, they didn't speak up. Now that ICE is here and predominantly targeting brown people and Hispanic, let them fight their battles. Because if it's us, they're not going to fight for us. That's the first comment that I got. And I'm like...
It represents a sentiment.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know, obviously, the only thing I said next to her was like, you know, that's how it starts. You get one minority, and then eventually, then you get rid of that, get another minority. By the time it comes back, to the only minority left, it's too late. There's no one else there to back you guys up.
Mm.
It's just the idea of conquer and divide, essentially, right? But like, that's the feeling a lot of, you know, there's some Black folks who had that same feeling. And because America, there's so much injustice between different minority groups, and often the case one minority group is going through so much difficulty, the rest of the country is not speaking up.
And that's still an open wound for a lot of folks in the Black community. And I would imagine, to a degree, in any American-born community, if you see, I would liken it to, right, we're all brothers to the same mom and dad, and then you know, mom and pop adopt a child, and now all of a sudden we're getting less attention. You could more than likely build up a level of animosity to it's like we just adopted. I was in your belly for 9 months.
I'm glad you brought that up, Mike, because I do think that a lot of folks understand politics through the lens of being in a family. Meaning, if somebody else in the family gets something good, then resources are being diverted away from me.
Sure, yeah.
I strongly encourage people to think otherwise, especially in the realm of a big country, when people are supported. And I mean, what happened to all sorts of minorities in the past in the United States was absolutely terrible, and people did turn away, and it was horrible. But at the same time, focusing on the lens of now, if there's a group being mistreated, building that up, building everybody up and together, the idea of separating and dividing and conquering, that's what they're doing. That is what they're doing. And I do think making empathy like a real thing as opposed to a weakness.
Yeah.
I mean, there is so much strength in empathy, and there's so much strength in people being together and actually focusing on our commonalities. But you're right. Why should people care? But I think in the next couple of years, we're going to learn exactly what you said. They're going to go to one group, to another group, women who want abortions, professors who speak out against this, they're going to jump from one to another. And it's so much easier to divide and conquer. And that's what's happened.
Yeah, let me ask a question that's been on my mind in this conversation. We know that like the Trump administration has singled out liberal cities, more diverse cities like Chicago, in terms of sending in the federal troops and that kind of thing. With this recent round of ICE raids, is there any data about like the political affiliation of the cities which they're sending ICE agents to?
Mm.
And I ask that because going back to your question about the sympathy and the compassion. And who could be for this, right? Who could watch seeing families pull out, like in Evanston, I mentioned they had. But here's the question. There's a question and then a question on top of that, right? In Evanston, like in Chicago, it's a very liberal city, college town, right next to Chicago. So already people are, against Trump. And so when there's an ICE raid, the community comes out, right? I'm wondering if these same ICE raids are happening in conservative towns and people are being pulled out their cars or houses, are community members who are politically affiliated with Trump, are they facing a moment where they're having to either go with their politics or go with their neighbors? Is there any data, do we know about these ICE raids? Are they being predominantly targeted? Because there's immigrant communities in conservative towns. My sister's visiting right now from St. Cloud, Minnesota, right? A very conservative town with a huge Somali Muslim population there. I'm really curious about how this stuff is playing out and more. I don't know if you have any
insight on that. I mean, when you're talking about New York, LA, Portland, Chicago, I do hear them going through Memphis. I mean, I guess I can't tell you whether Memphis is like a categorically blue or red state, but I mean, it seems less blue than the others. What other cities are they going after, other than blue states?
So they're not these ICE raids aren't
are
going
you,
to.
Are you healing?
No, I haven't heard that much about which is.
So
which
it's clearly retaliatory, and it's clearly targeting cities based on politics. And there's plenty of constitutional precedent that says that is totally wrong, absolutely unquestionably wrong. But then how do you prove it? I mean, you can prove it by showing in a court of law that these are all blue states, blue cities being targeted, and then hopefully a judge agrees.
All right, leave us with some. You're an optimistic guy. You play music to deal with the stress and express yourself.
Definitely.
Well, this has been super insightful already.
Thank you.
What are you doing personally to kind of feel optimistic and hopeful and deal with the stress? Is it the music? Is it not, other outlets? How are you coping?
I think if somebody cares, somebody's empathetic and they care. I do think being social is a revolutionary act. Getting people together, it's so isolating, especially with COVID being this people gravitating towards staying indoors and all that kind of stuff. It is a revolutionary act to get together, and not even politics. But that being said, there was the No Kings March, and it was absolutely, I don't know if you guys were there or not.
Stacked up on snacks.
I think I saw you. No, it was a lot.
Was Mark the one giving me the snacks?
I mean, it is normal to have empathy. It is normal to have compassion for people.
Of course.
It is abnormal to do the other thing, and it is unnatural to think that people don't deserve to have life or deserve to be with their family members.
Yeah.
I think that would be my answer. That and music, you know. Nice. But that would be my answer.
And how often do you normally play music? Is that
we try to play once or twice a month.
Once or twice a month.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I love that venue, the Old Town.
Yeah.
The one in Lincoln Square.
This Wednesday, Lincoln Square, we'll be there, and it's the International Music Festival, and it's a blend of Americana and Eastern European music and sort of klezmer.
You know? And if I recall, the last time we spoke about this, you kind of like, I don't know if this is, I don't know if I, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you said in your college days, perhaps, where you were kind of traveling doing music.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I more of that. I was in a few bands, some cover bands, some not cover bands. Nice.
So,
and music is a universal language, you know? It's one of the few things on the planet that brings everybody together without question.
It sure does.
Yeah,
it sure
does. That's dope that's, you know, also running in conjunction with the career that you have.
Yeah.
And so, if there's any advice you can give to especially asylum seekers or anyone who's right now have, you know, case pending and whatnot, especially right now with everything kind of being slowed down, what would you tell them? Would you tell them to like have hope and just wait it out a little bit, things will look bright, or will you tell them to like hurry up and get your shit together? Because
it's a case to case. It's really hard for me to tell. I mean, attorneys have ways of speeding things up or slowing things down.
Yeah.
And it's just a case to case. I will tell you, as far as I am pretty much 100% on removal defense on my people from Sudan. So I mean, the system in Chicago, the immigration judges recognize the terrible things that are going on in Sudan. Mm. I think it's 100%. I have lots of clients from Sudan, and again, that's optimism right there.
It is.
Yeah.
And before we start actually officially closing out, name of the firm, easiest way for anybody who watches this channel, this episode, that could use your services or recommend your services.
It's the Adkison Law Office in Chicago.
We
can link it in the notes of it.
I prefer you don't.
Okay.
I know. It has to do with the amount of business that we're. But gotcha. I mean, I thank you, thank you. But yeah, it's the Adkison Law Office.
Beautiful. And then last thing, so much question we asked today. Last question for me will be like, Music-wise, is there like venues in Chicago? If people want to reach out to you, how would they reach out to you?
It's Fugu Dugu. You can find us on Facebook and all sorts of different platforms.
Beautiful.
Fugu Dugu. We're on Spotify. You know, check us out.
We'll check you out.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
And I suppose I would thank you guys now. Is this now a good time?
Yes, proceed.
Thank
please.
You. Thank you so much for having me on. It really means a lot to me that you know, everybody's given a platform to talk about this stuff. So
thank you for coming.
Great conversation.
So that brings us to the end of another emergency episode of PCWB, Professor and Comedian. Welcome to a bar. I am your co-host, Mike Knight.
And I'm your co-host, Samir Abdul.
Guys, and I'm Sapir Vakil. Do us a favor, hit like, hit subscribe, share it. We're getting momentum. We're in season 2. We have some great things on the horizon, but we need your support. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Big shout out to Mark Atkinson.
Yeah, pop.
Thanks again.
Thank you, Mark, for coming.
All right.
And that has been it. See you guys next time.